Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
New York City to impose vaccine mandate on private sector employers. New York. From big Wall Street banks to corner grocery stores, all private employers in New York City will have to require their workers to get vaccinated against COVID-19, the mayor announced Monday, in the most sweeping vaccine mandate of any state or big city in the U.S. The move by Mayor Bill de Blasio comes as cases are climbing again in the U.S. And the worrisome but little understood Omicron variant is gaining a toehold in the nation's largest city and elsewhere around the country. We in New York City have decided to use a preemptive strike to really do something bold to stop the further growth of COVID and the dangers it's causing to all of us, he said. De Blasio, a Democrat, with just weeks left in office, said the mandate will take effect December 27th, with in-person workers needing to provide proof that they have received at least one dose of the vaccine, and they will not be allowed to get out of the requirement by agreeing to regular COVID-19 testing instead. The measure will apply to roughly 184,000 businesses not covered by previous vaccine mandates, ranging from multinational corporations to mom-and-pop businesses in the city of 8.8 million people. According to a spokesperson for the mayor, the city's private sector workforce is 3.7 million. Also, anyone 12 or older who wants to dine indoors at a restaurant, go to a gym, or see a show will have to produce proof of having received two shots of the vaccine, up from the current requirement of one dose, the mayor said, and children 5 to 11 will have to show proof of at least one shot. De Blasio said the moves are aimed at staving off a spike in infections amid holiday gatherings and the cold weather, which drives people more indoors where the virus can easily be spread. Phil Penta, who runs a specialty grocery store called Three Guys from Brooklyn, said the impending mandate would put him in a bind for forcing him to fire valued employees who are holding off against the vaccine. Everybody wants to do the right thing, but the right thing is different for everyone, said Penta, who said that the vast majority of his roughly 36 employees have been vaccinated. He said, I respect the right to say they don't want to take it. Vaccine rules across states and cities vary widely, with some states resisting any mandates and others requiring the shots for government employees or certain sectors that run a particularly high risk, such as healthcare workers. But no state has announced a broad private sector mandate like New York City's, according to data compiled by the nonpartisan National Academy of State Health Policy. President Joe Biden sought to impose a less far-reaching mandate nationally, requiring employees of businesses with 100 or more employers to either get vaccinated or undergo regular testing. But federal courts have blocked that plan for now, ahead of the January 4 deadline. De Blasio said he expects his mandate to survive any legal challenges. Employees will be able to ask for religious or medical exemptions. The mayor said he will release more details next week about how the mandate will be enforced. About 5.9 million adults in New York City have gotten at least a first dose out of 7 million people age 18 and up. That translates to 84%, about 5.8 million New Yorkers of all ages are fully vaccinated. Cases of the Omicron variant have been reported in about one-third of the states, but scientists cannot say for certain whether it is more dangerous than previous versions. U.S. health experts have strongly urged people to get their shots and a booster, saying they believe the vaccine will still offer protection against the new variant. The Delta variant still accounts for practically all infections in the U.S., and a rise in cases in recent weeks has swamped hospitals, especially in the Midwest and New England. New York City is averaging just under 2,000 new cases of COVID-19 per day, up from about 820 a day the start of November. Vaccination is the central weapon in this war against COVID. It's the one thing that has worked every single time across the board, de Blasio said in a virtual news conference. A lot of folks to me in the private sector have said to me they believe in vaccination, but they're not quite sure how they can do it themselves, he continued. Well, we're going to do it. Vaccinations are already required in New York City for hospital and nursing home workers and for city employees, including teachers, police officers, and firefighters. A vaccination mandate for employees of private and religious schools was announced last week. Some other private sector employees, including those at restaurants, gyms, theaters, and other entertainment sites, were also required to be vaccinated under rules issued earlier by the mayor. De Blasio, who leaves office at the end of the month and has indicated he will seek the nomination for governor of New York next year, has sought to portray himself as a national leader in the fight against COVID-19. His other vaccine mandates have largely survived legal challenges, and he has credited the policy with raising vaccination rates among the reluctant. The new mandate takes effect before de Blasio leaves office, and Democrat Eric Adams is due to be sworn in. Evan Thies, a spokesman for Adams, said in a statement that the mayor-elect will evaluate this mandate and other COVID-19 strategies when he is in office and make determinations based on science, efficacy, and the advice of health professionals. The Greater New York Chamber of Commerce, which includes some 30,000 businesses, big and small, said it supports the tightened measures. But other industry groups said the plan would add to the strain on businesses still struggling to recover from the pandemic and find enough employees. Catherine Wild, president and CEO of the Partners of New York City, a leading business group, said it is unclear who will enforce the mandate and even if it is legal. It is hard to imagine that the mayor can do what the president is being challenged to accomplish, Wild said. Death notice. Galen Jean Albritton. Galen Jean Albritton, 77, of Midland, died Saturday, December 4th in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. December 10th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Curtis Benninghoff is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
UK tightens travel testing rules. London. Britain's government tightened travel restrictions Saturday amid concerns about the spread of the Omicron coronavirus variant, saying all travelers arriving in England will need to take a COVID-19 test before they board their flight. Health Secretary Sajid Javid said the new rules will apply from 4 a.m. London time Tuesday. In light of the most recent data, we are taking further action to slow the incursion of the Omicron variant, he said in a tweet. Javid also added Nigeria to the UK's travel red list, which means that arrivals from there will be banned except for UK and Irish residents, and those travelers must isolate in designated quarantine facilities. He said there was a significant number of Omicron cases linked to travel with Nigeria, with 27 cases recorded in England. Karen Dee, the chief executive of the Airport Operators Association, said the new measures will be a major deterrent to travel, just as airports and the travel industry were hoping for a small uplift over the festive season. This is a devastating blow for aviation and tourism, she said. Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, December 5th. U.S. drug stores squeezed by vaccine demand and staff shortages, the Associated Press. A rush of vaccine-seeking customers and staff shortages are squeezing drug stores around the U.S., leading to frazzled workers and temporary pharmacy closures. drugstores are normally busy this time of year with flu shots and other vaccines, but now pharmacists are doling out a growing number of COVID-19 shots and giving coronavirus tests. The push for shots is expected to grow more intense as President Joe Biden urges vaccinated Americans to get booster shots to combat the emerging Omicron variant. The White House said Thursday that more than 2 in 3 COVID-19 vaccinations are happening at local pharmacies, and pharmacists worry another job might soon be added to their to-do list. If regulators approve antiviral pills from drug makers Merck and Pfizer to treat COVID-19, pharmacists may be able to diagnose infections and then prescribe pills to customers. There's crazy increased demand on pharmacies right now, said Teresa Toll, an independent pharmacist who has seen COVID-19 vaccine demand quadruple since the summer at her Sebastian, Florida store. Pharmacists say demand for COVID-19 vaccines started picking up over the summer as the Delta variant spread rapidly. Booster shots and the expansion of vaccine eligibility to include children have since stoked it. On top of that workload and routine prescriptions, many drugstores also have been asking pharmacists to counsel patients more generally on their health about chronic conditions like diabetes and high blood pressure. Pharmacies also have been handling more phone calls from customers with questions about vaccines or COVID-19 tests, noted Justin Wilson, who owns 3 independent pharmacies in Oklahoma. We're all working a lot harder than we did before, but we're doing everything we can to take care of people, Wilson said, adding that he has not had to temporarily close any of his pharmacies or limit hours so far. Toll said she was lucky to hire a pharmacy resident just before the Delta surge arrived. The new employee was supposed to focus mostly on diabetes programs, but has largely been relegated to vaccine duty. Toll said her Bay Street pharmacy is now giving about 80 COVID-19 vaccines a day, up from 20 before the Delta wave. God's timing worked out well for me, she said. We would not have gotten through without having that additional person here. Others haven't been as fortunate. A CVS health store on the northeast side of Indianapolis shuttered its pharmacy in the middle of the afternoon Thursday due to staffing issues. A sign taped to the metal gate over the closed pharmacy counter also told customers that the pharmacy will soon start closing for a half hour each afternoon so the pharmacist can have a lunch break. Such temporary closures have ebbed and flowed in pockets around the country throughout the pandemic, but they have grown more acute in recent months, said Ann Burns, a vice president with the American Pharmacists Association. Pharmacies all need minimum staffing to operate safely, and they sometimes have to close temporarily if they fall below those levels. Burns said many pharmacies already had relatively thin staffing levels heading into the pandemic, and a wave of pharmacists and pharmacy technicians left after the virus hit. Opinion, letter to the editor. Socialism is on the rise, Sandy Milner, Odessa, writes. If anybody has noticed in the last couple of years, socialism is coming. Gee, what a surprise. The Socialist Party of America was actually founded in 1901, thus meaning that the socialists have been working to overthrow the U.S. for about 120 years. It has become blatantly obvious since Obama was president. It has become in-your-face blatant since the coronavirus hit in 2020. Has it not occurred to anyone that the governmental attempts to force anyone to wear a mask all the time and trying to force everybody to stay home and not travel are nothing but a means of controlling the population? That is one of the indications of a socialistic regime, because a population that can't move around is easier to control. And requiring a vaccination certificate to travel or go out in public sounds suspiciously like the Nazis saying, "Show me your papers." The vaccination mandates are another example of trying to control people and are not legal. The government has no authority by law, nor by the Constitution, to force anyone to take any kind of medicine for any reason. That is an individual decision. One of the 8 steps in converting capitalism to socialism is letting the government take charge of the healthcare system. Another manifestation of socialism is the government takeover of the public school system. 99% of the schools do not teach anything about the Constitution, or if they do, they teach an incorrect version of what the Constitution actually says. I saw a picture of a page in a social studies textbook used in some school system, which showed the first 10 amendments, which are the Bill of Rights. A concerned parent had circled the Second Amendment, which, according to that textbook, said only that the Second Amendment meant that the people could carry arms in the National Guard. Anyone with an IQ higher than an ice cube knows that is not correct. But that type of thing is what students are being taught today. After all, if a person does not know what their rights are, it is easier to take them away. The First Amendment has also been perverted by liberals, socialists, who say that, of course, you have the right to freedom of speech, except you can't say things that hurt people's feelings. They try to say that hate speech is not protected under the First Amendment, but in actuality, it is. People have the right to say absolutely anything they want to. They also have the responsibility of accepting the consequences of what they say, but that is part of our freedoms. I may say something that makes you want to punch me in the mouth, but I still have the right to say it. If people do not wake up and start resisting this socialism encroachment, we will not be America much longer. We need to start by electing conservative politicians, whether Democrat or Republican, voting out all of the liberal, far-left-wing incumbents, whether Democrat or Republican. Most of them are Democrats. And trying to get America back to the principles on which it was founded. Civics should start to being taught in schools again. A course on the Constitution should be required for a high school diploma, and any teachers or professors who indoctrinate, instead of just teaching, should be summarily fired. Unfortunately, I don't hold out much hope of any of this happening because I'm afraid it has gone too far to stop it. But we can only hope. Holiday marketing ideas to boost brand engagement. Better Business Bureau. Based on last year's data, small businesses experienced a 26.6% increase in sales from online shopping over the holidays. So, what does that mean for your holiday marketing strategy? Small business owners should focus on their digital marketing strategy to increase brand engagement this holiday shopping season. To drive engagement and sales, BBB recommends revisiting your business strategy and consider implementing some of the following holiday marketing ideas. Holiday marketing ideas to boost brand engagement. The holiday season offers small business owners a unique opportunity to connect with customers and increase brand awareness. Whether you're planning an e-commerce site, social media campaign, or holiday party, increasing your brand engagement can help your business grow. Run a holiday-themed giveaway. Running a giveaway contest is a great way to generate brand engagement, especially during the holiday season. Giveaways incentivize customers to participate in your marketing efforts by offering them free products, discounts, or gift cards as a reward for engaging with your brand. They are also a great way to gauge interest in a product or service your business offers. Create a customer appreciation campaign. Running a customer appreciation campaign is another effective way to generate brand engagement, as it gives you the chance to take your customers and turn them into brand advocates. This tactic is especially beneficial during the holiday season when shoppers are looking to reward their favorite brands with their business. Customer appreciation campaigns are a great way to build trust, and form lasting relationships with your customers. Encourage user-generated content with a holiday-inspired hashtag. If you're looking for a relatively cheap way to build brand awareness, encourage your audience to create and share photos or videos of themselves utilizing your products or services. This type of user-generated content is a great way to spread brand awareness, and you can take it to the next level by creating a holiday-themed hashtag for your customers to use. This way, you can review all these posts in one place and have easy access to this content to use in your marketing campaigns. Don't forget to encourage feedback from your customers, as this will again help you connect with them on a deeper level. Participate in a holiday charity. Giving back to your community is a great way to generate brand awareness, and it will also improve your customer engagement. Community involvement also helps you gain brand advocates and develop better relationships with your customers. However, it is important to exercise caution when choosing a charity to partner with. Use give.org to help you find the perfect charity that matches your brand. Collaborate with influencers in your niche. Influencers have a large social media audience and can sway their followers' opinions and purchasing decisions. Collaborating with influencers is an excellent way to increase brand awareness and engagement, as they can introduce your products to their audience. Keep an open mind when looking for influencers to partner with. Sometimes a large following is not as important as a relevant one. Boost engagement through gamification. If gamification is your thing, then you're in luck. The holiday season makes this tactic even more appealing to consumers. For instance, you can create an interactive app that lets children create and send gift lists to their parents or interactive cards to their family and friends. This is a great way to encourage people to engage with your brand without pressuring them into a purchase. Scavenger hunts are also great ways to appeal to your customers and receive user-generated content that businesses can share on social media. Run holiday-themed email remarketing campaigns. Email remarketing campaigns allow you to specifically market to previous customers to encourage them to make another purchase. You can use email remarketing campaigns to highlight holiday discounts and seasonal products and services you feel your customers may be interested in. You can also use this method to let your customers know about a booth you'll have at a community event to encourage them to drop by. Create a holiday-related checklist. Everybody needs a little help staying on track during the holiday season. So why not create a fun, free, downloadable holiday checklist for your customers? Be sure to keep the list short and simple, including how your business can assist the customer in accomplishing their holiday goals. Using this marketing tool will keep your brand at the front of the customer's mind during the busy season and are easily shareable with friends and family. Get more holiday marketing tips from BBB. The holiday season can be a hectic time for your brand, but it's also a time of great opportunity. If you're looking to increase customer engagement through your holiday marketing strategy, visit bbb.org/business for more tips.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Carcinogenic factors in steak. Dear Dr. Roach, it seems that my once weekly steak should not be barbecued due to carcinogenic factors. A disappointment. How important is this effect? Answer. Grilling meat of any kind leads to the formation of two separate families of cancer-causing chemicals, carcinogens, the heterocyclic amines, HCAs, and the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. The old adage remains true that the dose makes the poison. Eating grilled meat less often will reduce your overall exposure, and there are steps you can take during cooking to reduce the generation of these toxic chemicals. These include meticulous cleaning of the grill to get rid of the char already there. Marinating your protein, which reduces formation of these toxins. Using herbs, likewise. Cooking at lower heat or reducing time on the grill by combining with other cooking methods. And cooking lots of grilled vegetables as well, which do not form these toxins when grilling. I have always recommended reducing, not eliminating, your less healthy food choices. If you like your grilled steak, make it as safely as possible and enjoy it. The harm from eating these occasionally is small.
This is the Dear Abby column. Cousin remains tangled in relative's longtime feud. Dear Abby, my cousin Scotty invited my husband and me to see his new house. He made it clear several times that my sister and her husband Ian are not invited because his wife doesn't like Ian. My sister and brother-in-law would have no problem if they never saw Scotty again, and I didn't intend for them to accompany us on this visit. However, every time I speak to Scotty, he reiterates not to bring my brother-in-law along. I admit, Ian is a difficult guy to get to know, but I've known him for 40 years and he really has a heart of gold. I think Scotty is being disrespectful to me by repeating that Ian isn't welcome. How can I resolve this in a way that won't result in not communicating with Scotty ever again? Signed, Relative Drama in Florida. Dear Relative Drama, the next time Scotty starts on his rant about Ian, head him off by interrupting and saying, "You have already told me that. You don't need to repeat it." Then change the subject. Dear Abby, my dear husband died suddenly last year. It's been difficult, but I'm blessed to have good friends and close family. The hardest part, however, has been the 4+ months it took to decipher his online accounts. He left me few passwords, and many of his contacts were uncooperative, some even cruel. Why should it be impossible to pay someone else's bill? I cannot stress enough how important it is to have a log or written account of passwords and usernames. It could have saved countless hours of stressful negotiations. Signed, Lesson Learned in Michigan. Dear Lesson Learned, please accept my sympathy for the loss of your husband. You are not the only spouse who has written about this very real problem. Sometimes the concept of a world without us in it can be difficult to comprehend, since the hesitancy to share passwords. But death can come at any time, as in your husband's case, with little or no warning. Readers, it can spare your loved ones a world of unneeded stress to log those passwords and make sure your spouse, trustee, or attorney can access them in case of an emergency. Dear Abby, when my wife of 9 months makes a dental or medical appointment, she gives her last name as her late husband's last name. He died 10 years ago. Should I be disappointed with my bride since, before we were married, she said she would adopt my last name? Signed, Newlywed in Florida. Dear Newlywed, why your bride would be hesitant to do this, I can't guess, but because it bothers you, discuss it with her before it festers. Informing healthcare professionals about a name change is fairly simple. All one has to do is inform the receptionist that a new name should be entered into the computer. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.